Welcome to This Week in Impact, where Impact Alpha editor David Bank and I break down some of the most interesting impact investing stories of the week. I'm Brian Walsh. It's Thursday, May 9th. Today we'll discuss how foundations are deploying their capital for impact on the heels of this week's Mission Investors Exchange Conference, efforts to sustainably harvest metals needed for the energy transition, and what David has been overhearing at the Milken Institute Global Conference. That's all coming up on This Week in Impact. Hi, David. You've been in LA this week for two very different conferences. What can you tell us about the different vibes between the Mission Investors Exchange and the Milken Institute Global Conference?
Yeah, it's been drinking from the proverbial fire hose, actually, at both of them. We started the week at the Milken Conference, which is over in Beverly Hills, and it's, you know, huge and crowded, and the hallways are teeming with, you know, billionaires and oil sheiks and celebrities from Hollywood, and you can't kind of make your way through without, you know, bumping into somebody famous. And then headed over downtown to the Mission Investors Exchange Conference, which is a bit smaller, I think about 700 compared to Milken's 4,000, but also teeming with over here, you know, foundation presidents and folks and a lot of folks that people, readers of Impact Alpha will recognize and know.
Well, let's start with the MIE conference. We've been previewing a lot of the themes in guest posts over the past few weeks. What sense did you get in the room for how foundations are thinking about deploying their capital for impact?
Well, there is a, you know, slow but steady trend towards the, you know, so-called 100% club. The California Endowment a month or so ago announced that it was moving its $4 billion endowment all to align up with its impact mission or its programmatic missions around health and whatnot. I would say there's a little bit of an undercurrent of anxiety, maybe, both around the world situation and maybe the political situation. And folks are starting to think about, you know, how can impact investing and foundations more broadly, play a role and kind of, you know, I don't know, step up the game in some way to change the narrative, let's just call it.
Speaking of stepping up the game, Laura Callanan of Upstart CoLab had a guest post today in Impact Alpha arguing that foundation talk really outpaces their walk when it comes to impact investing, noting that for some foundations, their processes to write checks to impact fund managers can take up to 24 months. What do you take of that criticism?
Well, that's kind of what I meant about this, you know, stepping up the game. And it's a little bit, it where you stand depends on where you sit, or is it the other way around? But folks who are trying to raise money, you know, will always, you know, think it's moving too slowly and the resistance is too high. So that's just take that with a grain of salt. On the other hand, there is a sort of sense that the so-called fierce urgency of now and sometimes is, you know, the fierce urgency of next year or wait a while. So part of it is speed, part of it is kind of willingness to take on new areas of interest. In her case, she's very keen on a sort of the inclusive creative economy and sort of using the arts and culture as ways to both change culture, obviously, but also, you know, be real drivers of economic inclusion. And it's sort of a new area for foundations to back. But on the other hand, you know, she does make some key points about how the kind of clubbiness, I guess, or the conventional wisdom, as it were, in the foundation world, is kind of holding back, you know, some of the more innovative and maybe far-reaching, ambitious things that impact investing could take on.
Speaking of issues that impact investing could take on, DEI and the backlash to DEI, there are some foundations that are trying to come out proactively to combat that backlash, almost like the backlash to the backlash.
The backlash to the backlash, or standing up to the backlash, as it were, that is palpable. I would say that's probably the sort of underlying theme here, and that's kind of what I meant a little bit about the sort of political situation. As you know, there've been some lawsuits against some programs and funds that specifically serve Black folks, Black entrepreneurs, and you know, kind of comes off of the Supreme Court decision last year around affirmative action. But the fear is that folks are taking those rulings and those lawsuits, you know, kind of too seriously and kind of beating a retreat before the battle has even been joined. And so a lot of, you know, kind of rallying cry here to sort of, you know, stand up and step up and kind of defend, you know, the notion that there is a sort of racial equity agenda that is obviously, you know, badly needed, but also, you know, can have, you know, popular support and kind of usher in, you know, prosperity for all and don't sort of take the bait, as it were, you know, retreat too, you know, prematurely.
Yeah, well, Tanya Allen of the Minnesota-based McKnight Foundation had a Q&A this week with Dennis Price in Impact Alpha, where she kind of really made that case explicitly. Can you tell us a little bit more about her work and how she's fighting back?
Tanya Allen, the president of the McKnight Foundation in Minnesota, probably the kind of star of the MIE in some ways, and she did basically make the case I just made about don't retreat on DEI. But she also said, you know, it's kind of swing big.
And so our work is really about pulling the civic sector together, essentially the capital allocators. So we're talking about financial institutions, corporations, foundations, we're talking about government at every level. How do we bring all of these capital allocators together to rethink the way that we're going to distribute capital so that it actually closes the wealth gaps in our region?
They're raising what they formed the Groundbreak Coalition in Minnesota to raise $5 billion, and it would be and specifically around, you know, closing racial wealth gaps, home ownership, business starts, kind of community investment. They've raised $1 billion, and she got a big cheer at the luncheon for the billion. But she was not, you know, resting on her laurels on that, and she's aiming for $5 billion. And the notion was, you know, another, and she said this, another, you know, $200 million funds, folks would say, you know, ho hum, $5 billion. You know, gets folks' attention and really can make a dent. And they have some pretty ambitious goals of, you know, having the closing the gap in home ownership between white homeowners and black homeowners, which I think is something like, you know, rough order of magnitude, you know, 75% of white families and only 25% of black families own their homes in that area. So things like that. And I think that kind of ambitious, you know, aiming high kind of agenda is what folks are really, you know, looking for.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss what it will take to sustainably harvest the metals and minerals needed for the energy transition.
I'm Eric Carmen Gonzalez, Impact Alpha's Director of Subscription Growth. Ever feel like there's so much happening, it's hard to keep up? We hear you. That's why we created Impact Alpha Latin America, a monthly newsletter for impact investors who want to keep their eye on trends and investments happening in Latin America and the Caribbean. Follow the money and connect with agents of impact powering Latin America's impact economy. Visit our Instagram page at Impact Alpha and click on the link in our bio to sign up.
In a guest post on Impact Alpha, Levi Zerberg wrote about the nearly $2 trillion of necessary investment in mining and production of key metals that will be needed to meet our most basic climate change goals, keeping warming below 2 degrees Celsius. Demand for clean tech metals, such as copper, lithium, nickel, and cobalt, will need to increase sevenfold by 2030, setting off a global scramble to secure these supplies. Mining these metals requires long lead times and a great amount of capital intensity. Looming over it all are a high degree of concerns and risk over geopolitical stability, environmental degradation, and social issues such as worker safety and human rights violations. David, we know these metals are critical, but how do we ensure that they are supplied for the energy transition in a sustainable way?
Yeah, well, you know, folks think, you know, clean energy or green energy or whatnot is, you know, all benign and positive impact. But the amount of materials, as you say, to, you know, produce all the EVs and solar panels is just staggering. And, you know, folks, you know, want, you know, to walk lightly on the earth, but they also want their iPhones and their Teslas and whatnot. So, you know, it's copper, it's cobalt, it's lithium, it's nickel. Some of these, you know, deposits are in remote and maybe unstable places. You know, the notion of a sort of sustainable mining industry, you know, strikes some folks as a oxymoron, but in fact, the mining companies are pretty aware of what they call the need to maintain their social license to operate. So there's been a whole movement among the companies and in civil society as well to kind of create standards, working standards, working conditions, as you mentioned, but also environmental safeguards. And it turns out that the mining industry might be actually one of the biggest beneficiaries of being able to, you know, claim a kind of ESG standards and practices.
So that's like the kind of the dirty underbelly, if you will, of the clean energy transition is all of the materials that go into that transition. And how do we make sure that we harvest them in the most sustainable way, even though that this industry is very fraught with a whole bunch of risks. But with those risks comes opportunities, right?
Certainly, as the piece pointed out, you know, the cure for high prices is high prices in commodities. So lithium prices were very high a couple years ago as people realized how critical it was to these lithium ion batteries and whatnot. But that boom led to a surge, not just in sort of mining and exploration, but all kinds of new technologies for extracting lithium. Something called direct lithium extraction, you know, raises the yield for a given amount of lithium. And so lithium prices last year kind of crashed. And now, you know, supplies are abundant of this thing we thought was scarce. So there is a way that, you know, we're probably going to muddle through, you know, if something if a given mineral is hard to find or very expensive, folks will find, you know, alternatives for it. And that part, you know, I think is kind of, you know, encouraging in a way that we probably do have what we need to get through this energy transition. And then, as you said, the key is to make sure that we do it, you know, in a sustainable way with regard to the human cost and the environmental costs.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll dig into the high finance gathering that is the Milken Institute Global Conference.
Every day, Impact Alpha uncovers stories that make a difference to impact investors. I am Zalema Beeble, Chief Operating Officer at Impact Alpha, here with a special reminder. Subscribers get the award-winning brief 5 days a week and so much more. Unlock exclusive coverage, get access to subscriber-only calls and Slack channels, plus search hundreds of jobs and internships at the Impact Alpha Career Hub. What are you waiting for? Subscribe today. Learn more at impactalpha.com/subscribe.
The Beverly Hills Hilton, traditionally the place for celebrities attending the Golden Globes, gave way this week for over 4,500 celebrities of finance and industry for what is sometimes referred to as the Davos of the West, the Milken Global Conference. David, you're there now with speakers ranging from Elon Musk to Bill Ackman to Queen Abdullah of Jordan. How have you seen this year's theme, Shaping a Shared Future, playing out?
Yeah, Shaping a Shared Future. Milken is an amazing kind of conglomeration. You know, there's a, I would say, a minority track, but a pretty visible presence of folks, you know, talking about the climate transition and renewable energy, but also, you know, very strong representation from the sort of sovereign wealth funds of some Middle East, you know, oil countries. And interesting, I had a conversation with an executive from Mubadala, which is one of the Emirati sovereign wealth funds, I think about $275 billion. And he made the case that the oil countries in the Middle East are leading and financing the green energy transition, and that they see themselves as energy producers, and they want to be dominant in the green energy economy as they have been in the oil economy. So there was a notion to kind of bring folks together. There was a lot of politics there, as Michael Milken likes to do, and he was spotted before the conference, and Puck reported a meeting with Peter Thiel and Elon Musk and Rupert Murdoch that was dubbed a kind of anti-Biden dinner party. So there was a bit of politics underlying the whole thing, but you know, he got a pretty bipartisan crowd up there. He closed out with President Clinton, former President Clinton, on stage, and so I guess that's kind of, you know, trying to bring folks together. We'll see how that all works out.
In this Shaping a Shared Future, who is that shared future for?
Well, this is, you know, a heavily financed crowd. So, you know, it's possibly a shared future for the hedge fund and folks and the bank executive, you know, presidents that were there. that's sort of the unavoidable conclusion from a week spent at the Milken conference. But for example, folks were quite upbeat about the economy, you know, about the job situation, the employment situation, about inflation coming down. So, you know, some things that, you know, have not been maybe getting the credit or attention they deserve about, you know, where things are at in the economy. Folks were acknowledging that the U.S. economy actually quite strong and quite healthy.
Now, you noted at the MIE conference across town, there was an ovation for a new initiative around DEI. Do you think the same kind of ovation would have happened at the Milken Global Conference?
No, I think the reception might have been a little bit different, although probably would have been couched in sort of more euphemistic terms. But, you know, folks like Bill Ackman were on stage, who has led the charge in some level against DEI in terms of some of the university implications. And there was sort of a notable, you know, kind of, you know, retreat from some of those themes and from ESG as well, which has also been a target of some of the backlash.
Right. And it's just interesting the you know, juxtaposition of these two conferences, where you have the foundation world, which represents certainly collectively hundreds of billions of dollars in assets under management that are collectively in the endowments of these foundations. But MIE kind of represents a smaller number of foundations than the overall universe of foundations that are committed to leveraging, you know, more than just their grant dollars for their mission. Whereas the Milken Conference kind of represents an order of magnitude greater amounts of capital. You're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars represented by the participants there. And it just seems like the different types of conversations, the different types of priorities, and the different types of kind of folks that are attending and their mindset has got to be pretty stark.
Yeah, the scale is quite different. One of the markers of that was there was a discussion around sort of the green energy transition, and Impact Alpha has been quite keen on the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund awards. You know, $20 billion going to community lending for, you know, the green transition, and particularly in low and moderate income communities. And it didn't get even a mention in this meeting about the green transition, and the analysis afterwards was, you know, $20 billion over there is like a kind of mid-sized private equity fund, and $20 billion over here was considered a kind of once in a generation historic opportunity. So the scale of the challenge and the scale of the resources is quite different.
And also, I think it just kind of brings to mind, for me personally, just the humility that those in the impact investing ecosystem have to bring when they're thinking about the capital and the resources that they are trying to leverage, and the scale of the challenges we face, and in the context of the broader capital markets that aren't leveraged or focused on impact. And how do you find those?
I would just take issue with the humility. I would say, you know, this is kind of the scale of the ambition that's required to transform those broader markets and get everybody kind of rowing in the right direction, and not just kind of get consumed with some of the issues that confront the philanthropic sector or the even the impact sector. But that really the game is to change the whole global financial system.
There you go. Always the editor, David Bank, with a good edit there, from the humility to the ambition. I like that. I think that's a good place to leave it for this week. Thanks so much for listening to This Week in Impact. Now, David, what's the best way for people to contact us with any questions or feedback or show ideas?
As always, Brian, folks can reach out and let us know what they think at podcast@impactalpha.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much, David.
Thank you, Brian. It's always fun.
All right. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen and share this with a friend or colleague. If you want to help us out, be sure to rate us and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find the show. This Week in Impact is a production of Impact Alpha and part of the Impact Alpha Podcast Network. For more exclusive stories about the world of impact investing and sustainable finance, join other agents of impact by subscribing to Impact Alpha. Just go to impactalpha.com/subscribe for full access. Thanks, as always, to our producer extraordinaire, Isaac Silk. For David Bank, I'm Brian Walsh, and we'll see you next week for more Impact.